Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, September 26, 2013. And a lot of topics to talk about tonight. The main science topic will be an analysis of how the sun's local current activity affects the strength of comets, in particular, Comet Ison. And so we have a very interesting situation where we are supposed to have the comet of the century, but the comet is turning out to be an extremely, extremely small minor comet. So how does the sun actually affect the dimensions, what we see in a comet? So that will be the main science topic, and a very, very timely one, as this is science that is going on right now. And of course, as always, we have to compare this to the standard science explanation, which the Dirty Snowball Comet model, which is just fairy tale science. But how do they, you know, what kind of band-aids do they have to come up with to try and describe what's going on? But what's more important is describing what is going on, what's going on with the sun or what's not going on with the sun, and how does this directly affect the comet. First, a couple quick announcements, discussions here. I got an email from a listener, and something I've also been following myself for some time. I've commented on this before on the show. Clinton Global Initiative. When Billy got done being prez, he handed off the torch, of course, to George Bush Jr. And these guys, you have to understand, are not political foes. They've been in business for years and a very long time under the CIA. Look up this. Anybody can find this information. If you want to get educated on this, read a book called Compromised: Clinton, Bush, and the CIA. Get a little bit of an education on Billy and in the Bushes. But Bill, when he got done being president, went off and started something called the Clinton Global Initiative. And so he is flitting around the world. But this is a globalist organization, and they are having their currently having their annual meeting. And little Obama is going to attend, and a lot of high-level business people. Now, these are the people who make the New World Order run. These are the greedy little people that are in basically high-level international business entities. But what's interesting is they have changed the term sustainability. Now, traditionally, sustainability, the term means in a society where you live within your means. This includes resources. This includes the use of resources and the reuse of resources. To the point where you have, the goal is to have zero effect on the environment. In other words, you live within your means. You don't have gas-guzzling SUVs. A sustainable society or community is one in which you have your food provided. The old colonies were great examples of sustainable societies, where they lived, they used the resources they gave back to the land, and they understood. And even a better example were the Native Americans, who used and understood and worshiped the land they were part of it. They weren't in control or in charge of it. They were a part of an ecosystem, and they understood this. But now the new definition for sustainability is to sustain the world economy as it currently is. Now, that ain't sustainability, and it can't be sustained, and all of the world leaders are sitting around scratching their things because they don't understand, and of course they're running into a quagmire. The banker model, and of course Billy is a New World Order banker pawn, minion, like Obama, like the Clintons. If you know their name, if you see them, they're not the top people. These are people who, because they are allowed to become very rich and live a wonderfully plush lifestyle, they get to operate within this system. And the story with Bill Clinton, of course, was that when he was governor of Arkansas, he won his first election, and then he started becoming kind of independent. And he got slam dunked out of the political arena, just kind of like Arnold Schwarzenegger has. Many other political figures have gone down overnight in a ball of flames. And then the term is that Billy got religion. He understood who put him there, why he was there, and all of his benefits in his life came at the nodding, at the consent, at the prodding, at the behest of the people above him, the people who put him there, the people who allowed him to operate. And so Billy got religion. And see, he's been a good boy ever since, good New World Order minion, doing his thing, collecting his part of the profits, and of course becoming president, so on. But after he got done being prez, he started the Clinton Global Initiative, which is nothing more than another worldwide organization to bring on globalism. And so one of the big things they're talking about now is water. Water. So if you have not read my water book yet, it's simply called Water. It's an e-book on my webpage, JMCCSCI. Get an education. It's not like any other book on water that you will find. It's not a fun facts, National Geographic, look at the water resources, or something like that. It is a book about the control of water, who controls water, who is out there manipulating and controlling water. And anyway, the Clinton Global Initiative meeting is exactly that. Part of their concentration is on world water resources. And so I'll make a comment in a minute about the Kenya, supposed Somali terrorist attack on a mall there, which is very much related to the Kenya water fines that just happened. That's to destabilize the government and to gain control of that water. Obvious, but that couldn't be more obvious than, I don't know what. But at any rate, the changing of the term sustainability, but like I say, the world economic leaders that are in attendance there are having a problem because the world is running out of resources. It's growing by leaps and bounds. It'll be gaining another billion population, they say, by the year 2030. But the end result is we're on a crash course. The good resources have already been taken, the easy resources, the timber, the minerals, the mining, the more difficult to obtain resources are yet to be found. But the world cannot sustain economically, so they're trying to find new economic models so that they can maintain economic control, the economic system that we now see today. But real sustainability has nothing to do. It's the exact opposite of the current banker model. Okay, so right now I am going to read to you and discuss the people in attendance, the speaker list at this meeting. It's very interesting. It starts out with Bono, U2 lead singer. And they always get a singer. Some of these singers' histories are very interesting, but I won't dwell on that. Bill Clinton, of course, will be there. Hillary and then Chelsea. It turns out to be, now Hillary is a former U.S. Secretary of State and a senator from New York, and she's kind of running independent right now. But interestingly enough, the vice chair of the Clinton Global Initiative is Chelsea Clinton, the Clinton's daughter. And that's real interesting because you see how these kids are cultured and brought into the new world order to be leaders. And there's probably nobody that has their skids greased better than Chelsea. You know, to work in and possibly run for president someday of the United States. Here's another guy, says Hikmet Ersek is the president and CEO of Western Union. So that may not seem too unbelievable, but here is the next two, Bill and Melinda Gates, Gates Foundation. And, of course, Bill Gates was kind of a rebel up to a certain point. He had was refusing to allow the government to put backdoors into his software. And so they came at him kind of from a side attack and attacked Microsoft as being a monopoly, which, of course, it was. But they let up the pressure when Billy folded and allowed the government to come in and put their back doors so that the government can watch you through Microsoft products and watch everything you do on your computers. So with that, Billy got to, as with Bill Clinton, Bill Gates got religion. And, of course, his wife followed along because the money's good. As a result of this, Bill Gates got to buy into a government-initiated large telescope in South America. Gee, what a swell deal to have your own Planet X searching telescope down there in South America. And Bill came in with a little bit of funding, polished it off, and then became owner of that. Isn't that sweet? Don't you just love how these guys work in? Here we go, Christine Lagarde, I think this is how you pronounce it, Lagarde, Managing Director, International Monetary Fund. Well, isn't she a sweet little old lady? Yeah, well, these are the people who work out of the World Bank that come in, destroy economies, destroy countries. Read a book called Confessions of an Economic Hitman if you want to know what this sweet little old lady is in charge of. How they come in, destroy the lives of billions of people, take over resources, and take over politically countries. Of course, little Obama's going to be there. He's a New World Order shill. And then look at this one, Sheryl Sandberg, Chief Operating Officer of Facebook, the CIA-owned operation that goes into everybody's personal life and has all their personal information, all their pictures, all of their personal face identities. Facebook is not about you and your friends. It's about the government having all of the information about you. That's why they can track you through airports, down the city street, or any place else simply by you showing your face. Isn't that swell? So here's those are the main members at the Clinton annual meeting. And now look at the term, the plenary session that they're dealing with. Creating business at the base of the pyramid is one of the topics. That's on for today. That was actually yesterday, I guess. But they're talking about alleviating poverty. They're talking about basically trying to, here's the goal, is to try and bring up the lowest levels of the 6 billion people of the world, but bring the developed countries like the United States, Europe, parts of Russia, etc., into a large global economy. And to do that, they have to bring the United States down. So what do? They flood the United States with illegal aliens. Over 40 million Mexicans in the United States right now, and lots of other illegal aliens from all other countries, destroy the economy, the jobs that allow these people to exist here, destroying the economy, and that's going to take the United States down to the level of the other countries so that the agenda can come in. Now, I just want to mention that the Kenya mall terrorist activity I got so many responses from people who just smelt this immediately. Thank you, audience, for being intelligent out there. Last week, I talked on my show about the new find of water. Huge finds. This was sponsored and funded by the United Nations UNESCO. I believe that's United Nations for Education, Science, and I forget the C word there. But they have funded satellite operations that used to be used for oil. Isn't that sweet? Now they're looking for water deposits, and they found a major one in Kenya. A number of days later, a group of Somali terrorists come in, shoot up a Kenya mall, destabilize the government, and look who gets to ride in on their white horse to save the day and take over the water resources. At any rate, that's the world is a banker-owned and operated state at this point. So that took about 15 minutes of my time on this show, but like I say, read my book, Water, and that'll give you a lot more information on the global takeover of water and other resources. I should just quick mention also that I saw a brief this past week on the UN Global Impact Study, which is a global economy analysis on keeping the global economy on track. So once again, the UN has turned in, it started out as a good concept for peace amongst nations, but it soon turned into a world banker as they come in, infiltrate, and take over everything that is good and that exists for the benefit of people. They have taken it over, and it is nothing more than a new world order European banker, Rothschild-based operation to, with its fingers out in every country of the world, to manage and manipulate. You notice when there are wars, the UN sanctions them. They're not there for peace. Guys like Nelson Mandela were a little bit of a thorn in their side and remain that way because they're actually real people. But the actual situation out there is that the UN is a operation table for the New World Order. Just a quick comment. There's a crisis going on in the United States right now. I call it the insurance crisis. The insurance companies in the United States are the only way I can see this is they're not doing well. Let's put it that way. There's a lot of greed at the top, profiteering, and the main goal of insurance is to protect the insured. They love to give you that image when they give you their advertisement and ask for your money. But a lot of the old-term companies are not in what I would say position to help you. And that's the main point here. They might be doing financially well, but that's because they're raping the public. And it's the end result. And it crosses the border between health insurance, homeowners insurance, car insurance, all around the board. Many people are probably not aware that much of your premium in your car insurance goes to pay for uninsured motorists. And you can look up tables on the internet on this, but the states allow uninsured motorists because it's part of the globalist agenda to infiltrate the country with illegals who don't have driver's license, who don't have insurance. So if you get in an accident with one, your company will pay and you will pay more insurance. And what I found also is that the police will typically find fault with the person who has insurance. So and therefore feeding this whole process where much of your insurance bill goes to pay for the uninsured motorist in your state. But just in general, my advice to people is to get away from insurance as much as you can. With the Obamacare mess that's coming in. Insurance and the whole concept of insurance is not going to be good for the individual. Remember that Obamacare is like Facebook and many other government programs to help the children, so to speak. They are meant for public control. And there's no bigger method of control than owning the information on your medical sheets. Just a solar update quickly. The sun is flatlined. Nothing going on. And this is so obvious now. It is so glaringly obvious that spaceweather.com even came out and made a statement, which I was surprised at, as they promote auroras up around the North Pole still. But they had to actually say that the sun ain't doing nothing, which surprised me. But this leads into a quagmire, which I'll be talking about in a minute. They are desperate for some kind of natural solar flare event that they can use to bring down the power grid. And it isn't happening. The only hope they have is Comet Ison coming in after November 13th, after it has its electrical interaction with Mercury. But even Comet Ison is minimally small. I'll be talking about that. I did my own observations again this week. And I'm sorry to tell people, I've been saying get binoculars, go out in the morning sky and look. Comet Ison just has not grown. It is, it's about a 15th magnitude right now, which would require a fairly decent amateur telescope, plus the knowledge on how to use it. I thought that by now, Comet Ison would be naked eye visible, if not near naked eye visible, and certainly well visible with binoculars. I have various sets of binoculars, all the way up to very large binoculars. It's just really just almost impossible to see with even the big binoculars. And the my telescope, etc., it's just a little fuzzy little kind of a thing of a comet. But that's going to be my main science topic, is talking about how the sun directly affects the size of a comet. But the sun, as far as its activity, is just not there. I mean, it has zero chance of solar flaring. So that'll be interesting to see when Comet Ison does interact with Mercury around the 10th to the 14th of November. If the comet grows, if the planet Mercury goes comet, that is one of the best opportunities I have seen ever for a planet to actually literally turn into a comet, where it would have a visible comet tail. And I really, really, really would love to see that, to see NASA try and explain that one away. But at any rate, that's when we may see some solar activity as a result of Comet Ison. And that's when Ison could develop a sunward spike, something that NASA, once again, really works hard to dispel the concept of a sunward spike. But hurricanes, none. It's been an absolutely dud year for hurricanes, and I hope this is the year that finally the Hurricane Prediction Center loses its funding, because clearly they have egg all over their face. And the hurricanes, the water is warmer than normal. So according to them and their theories, there should be a lot more hurricanes now than ever. But they're not there. What's going on? The global warming people predicted that more hurricanes due to global warming. They have egg all over their face. There should be more hurricanes every year, according to them. And especially now that we have had some relatively warm weather. Anyway, the sun is flatlined. I want to mention briefly, starting out this discussion on Comet Ison and the effect by the sun, there is now an official NASA news release statement about Comet Ison. It's been out for a couple weeks, but it's a you have to understand, it's like reading the story about the Kenya-Somali mall shooting. You have to understand who's behind it, who's doing it, and what the reason is. In that case, it's the New World Order looking to take over the water rights of Kenya, and then how it's presented, etc. By the way, I saw an article today where they can't find the bodies of the people who were killed in the in that mall attack. All of the bodies seem to be missing. But at any rate, getting back to the article, the official NASA article that's going around about Comet Ison is edited, written by a guy named Tony Phillips. And I have talked about this before, where Tony is, his article for years and years and years, many, many years, probably decades, he has been the official news release person for NASA. And back when we had Comet Ellen and Comet Lovejoy. Now, understand that NASA has many little fingers out there that it supports, like the Naval Research Observatory, the NRO, the other pages like the Discover Magazine blogs, all of which support NASA fairy tale science, but are not really NASA. And down at the bottom, they will all have their little disclaimer that they are not funded by NASA. They're just there to be good citizens. No, they are funded by the money that comes under the table through the back door, and the people that operate these are many times low-level scientists who never made it, and they're just in there, doggone it, trying their hardest to be good little scientists, and that's their role in life. They'll never get anywhere past that. But they're the people that are out there defending the NASA party line. Okay, so you have all of these fingers that are out there denying that comets can have an effect on the sun. Weeks ago when that comet came in, before it hit the sun, it had a discharge, sent off a CME, the only CME that the sun has had in months and months and months. And NASA's little outreach people are out there, this is not possible, it wasn't due to the comet being there. And we have hundreds and hundreds of these where you directly see the electrical discharge coming off the nose of the comet, hitting the sun explodes. But at any rate, that leaves NASA very clean, where they don't have to make any public statements. But now NASA does have, like I say, a public statement edited by Tony Phillips, who's the official fairy tale science manager for NASA. And in it, he does some crafty interviews of a guy named Kerry Liss of Goddard Space Flight Center, who is now a coming up in rank scientist, and who was, for example, the person who accidentally discovered X-rays and comets in 1996. That was kind of his claim to fame to get started. It brought him into prominence. But you have to understand, to get a job at Goddard, you don't just fall into these. You have to be a fairly significant scientific person to get a job like that. And so, yeah, he's a good scientist. I never believed for a minute that he thinks that comets are dirty snowballs. But be that as it may, maybe he does, because that's what he's saying. So either he's a liar or he's really stupid. And looking at all this data that they have access to, the 60 different instruments that will be trained on Comet Ison, he has access to all of the data and seeing it in all of the various wavelengths, ultraviolet, X-rays, etc., and seeing the luminosity curves of the comets and all of the other data. For example, being in charge of the deep impact probe, all of this, where the impactor went into the comet Temple 1, or was it Temple 2, and impacted with the nucleus, and dust came out, and they go, ooh, the water must be deeper. On that comet nucleus, I remember it was 0.004% of the surface had any dusting of water, and it was just sitting there. It wasn't coming off the nucleus. So how could you look at all of this data and still say that a comet is a dirty snowball? It is so absurd. But at any rate, as I say, Tony Phillips, the Tier 2 fairy tale science editor for NASA that keeps that Tier 2 twist on everything, makes sure that nothing gets out there that could possibly be interpreted to suggest anything differently or that my work might be correct. And then interviewing Carrie Liss, the scientist from Goddard, and it's, so it's a very structured article. And they're talking about, I made fun of this last week on my show, where they're now saying they created a new term called the frost line, that a comet will not become excited till it crosses this imaginary frost line somewhere out around the orbit of Mars. But remember that the biggest comets in history were discovered far beyond the orbit of Saturn, way, way out there. And so there was no magical frost line involved at that point. Those comets were very far beyond any magical frost line. So once again, fairy tale science at its best. But it's interesting to note that NASA now is starting to release its program of misinformation regarding Comet Ison that'll carry them into November. There is some reason that they saw fit that they have to control the information from Comet Ison, forming a panel of so-called comet experts to make sure that and also filtering all of the photos that come in from amateurs through the NASA website, through spaceweather.com, to make sure that none of them have any information that could possibly be used to support my work and show that Jim McCanny is right and make it obvious that the dirty snowball comet model is incorrect. Okay, so enough of that. On to real science. Why does the sun affect the comet Ison the way it is doing right now? I talked already about the fact that the sun is flatlined. What does that mean? Well, there are many properties of the sun, including the solar wind. That's the main factor which affects us on a daily basis. And then the power that's built up, the energy, I should say, that's built up in the solar capacitor. The proton, excess of current of protons that leaves the sun eventually builds up a capacitor, but the sun has been so weak for so long that that capacitor is extremely weak. When we pass through the return current sheet, by the way, this cannot continue forever, this excess current of protons, so there has to be return current sheets to balance the electrical solar circuit in the solar system. And one of those electrical return current sheets is where Earth passes in the month of August. That's why the hurricane season, the tornado season, the aurora season all peak in the month of August. They build up from about June, and then they taper off into November. but this year, especially, the sun is so weak, it is weaker than it has been in 200 years, even during solar minimums. And I found it cute that spaceweather.com even commented on that the sun is weaker than during many solar minimums. Okay, so the solar wind is weak. The solar capacitor is extremely weak. The comet Ison started off as somewhat of a significant comet, had a little bit of a burst, and that apparently initiated NASA to say that it would be the comet of the century. But the reality is that it just doesn't have any energy to tap in the discharge of the solar capacitor, using my plasma discharge comet model. So Comet Ison is very weak. It's one shatter of hope that's occurring right now, and I've been watching nightly. I've been in a position where I've had extremely pristine viewing conditions personally of Comet Ison. Extremely pristine conditions, and that's because I'm in a location where it's cold, it's dry, and very beautiful viewing conditions. Comet Ison is extremely small. It's approaching Mars. What, today is the 26th. And so remember that let's talk about dimensions here. I don't know what the nucleus size of Comet Ison is. The COMA, which is the gas cloud around Comet Ison, is around 30,000 miles. It's not very big at all. So it's going to pass within 7 million miles of Mars. Based on NASA's prediction of size and dimensions and properties of comets, originally I said Comet Ison could be big enough where Mars would be enveloped inside the COMA, the gas part of the COMA of Comet Ison. It does not look like that's going to happen unless there's some kind of magic miracle that Comet Ison explodes into brightness. But it is coming up and above Mars. It'll be passing 7 million miles above Mars, over the top of Mars, on October 1st. And so it's coming up behind Mars. At any point, it should be connecting electrically with the planet Mars. And any day now, that should happen. So I would expect a brightening of Comet Ison. Would Mars go comet? It's possible that Mars could develop an actual comet tail during this process, that the Mars already has its small electrical discharge operating because it too is in the solar capacitor. But remember, when the comet connects electrically, they will become one electrically. And so there are many different size issues regarding the planets, the comets, etc. Mars' tail is fairly weak compared to Earth's tail. We're closer to the Sun. But Mars' tail, basically a plasma tail, extends halfway to Jupiter. So it extends out maybe 100 million miles. Very weak out there. But at some point, Comet Ison and Mars could connect. And Mars could literally, because it's forward of the comet, could pop out and go comet. It could develop an actual comet tail at some point, because Comet Ison is coming up behind it. And so that's something I'm watching for, either a brightening of the comet, a rapid brightening, and of course NASA will say, oh, it crossed the dew line, it crossed the frost line. That will be the official NASA fairy tale science explanation. But that could happen, but then Comet Ison would maintain that tight level of excitation as it moved into this inner solar system. And by the way, just to dispel all the rumors and nutcase stuff out there on the internet, some which use my name and use my information, Comet Ison is not Nibiru. It does not have a flotilla of planets surrounding it. It does not have a nucleus of 30,000 miles across. It must have a fairly small comet nucleus. I don't know because I don't have a way to measure it. It has no possibility of coming near Earth. And NASA started this one that there are supposed to be two streamers of red dust that left Comet Ison a while ago that are going to collide with Earth. No, there's no such thing. I talked about the January 14th, 15th time frame, 2014, coming up when Comet Ison will have a direct electrical alignment. Jupiter, Comet Ison, Earth, our new moon, and Venus. So that's a cross solar system alignment, of which Comet Ison is just one factor. If you took Comet Ison out of there, Earth would still have an interaction with all of those factors, and we could have severe weather on that time frame. Add Comet Ison in as another factor, and we could see some elevated weather activity due to the fact that Comet Ison is a contributor to all of those factors, not the only one. And so, but that's could be some severe weather. I did say that if we connect and that tailed material, it's really a long shot that Comet Ison, that Earth could in fact go a little bit comet and we could have a little bit of sulfur dioxide, because Comet Ison will be connecting out to Jupiter at that point, probably electrically could draw in some sulfur dioxide, and that could be drawn into Earth, the upper atmosphere. In fact, I'm so right on in that prediction that NASA came out with a fairy tale science a paper that they published in a peer-reviewed journal saying that Comet Ison let out a streamer of red dust, one around the sun and one from the other direction, and that they would meet with microparticles on the Earth's upper atmosphere on January 14th and 15th. Everything I have predicted about comets, including Comet Ison, NASA has come out and had some kind of counter article that they could point to in case I'm right, including an article saying that comets, now dirty snowball comets, can affect the sun if they crash directly into them. But then all of the apologists come along and say, well, no, not really. Then it's a dog and pony show of they need the article there to say that comets could affect the sun, but then they have to dispel it and say, well, they really don't expect that because it's a long shot. So it's really funny to see this dog and pony dance that's going on between articles they have to put out to cover me to try and put fairy tale science in front of my predictions, and then have the other people coming out and saying, when people jump on it and say, well, Jim McCanny said this, they go, oh, but dirty snowballs can't do that, so we really don't expect it. So they want their cake and eat it too. I guess that's the simple way of putting it. So the end result is that the sun is extremely weak, and that's why it makes it also very interesting as Comet Ison works its way in towards the sun for that November interaction with Mercury, that the sun will probably continue to be extremely weak. There's no reason to imagine that the sun is going to jump up one of these days and start kicking out solar flares. Let's go back 10 years, right now probably about 11, 12 years, to the previous solar maximum. And I'll just explain, I'll compare what's going on today to what was going on then. Right now the sun is flatlined, zero, nothing going on. 12 years ago during the solar maximum, there was a double peak solar maximum. It maxed out, and by the way, the number of sunspots is how they consider the solar maximum. Right now, the sunspots that are there are not doing anything. They're just like a calm pool of water. That's typically where the big solar flaring starts. Not always, but a lot of times. But you usually associate sunspots with the potential for solar flares or CMEs. None of the solar sunspots right now are doing anything. Go back 11 years. The sun was booming. It was like boom, 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 boom. Every couple hours, big solar flares off into space. And by the way, that is a good indication, too, that space is a big place. You can have a lot of solar flaring, and it doesn't even come near us. But what it is doing is building up the solar capacitor. And by the way, that was a result, end result of Hale-Bopp. So there's a couple feedback processes going on here. Prior to Hale-Bopp, the sun had built up a fairly significant stable capacitor, probably twice or three times the distance to Pluto, out beyond Pluto. That's the level of that's the distance I estimate where the solar capacitor would be. Okay, when Hale-Bopp came in, it was discovered way out there. It was pretty far out in the solar system. And so it started discharging the entire solar capacitor. That's what made it so big so fast. For a period of 6 years, Hale-Bopp discharged the solar capacitor. And this built up the power of the sun. There was a... What happens is that energy then passes along electrical current line between the comet and the sun, and that energy flow causes more fusion in the sun, in the surface of the sun. And so the sun was extremely reactive. It had a double solar peak, something that has never been recorded before. It had tremendous epoc of hurricanes and typhoons in the Pacific, hurricanes in the Atlantic, and by the way, that's where manipulated storms really started to take off, where they started to use the laser technology in the mid-90s. I worked with Russian scientists. What we did was develop the techniques for controlling weather and bringing them offshore so that they would not conflict with populated areas. It was the United States mill boys who took that over and started using it against our own populations. And so, in fact, the Russian scientists went to the United Nations and made a statement. They said, the United States is using this as a weapon of warfare, and they could use it against Russia. At that point, they were complaining because Russia thought that they would use it against them as a weapon of warfare, and they wanted it to be classified as a weapon of warfare. And the United States would not sign any treaties, let alone any treaties that prevented them from using it on their own citizens. So we saw Hurricane Katrina. We saw many other hurricanes, the four hurricanes that crisscrossed Florida one time, the many hurricanes that came in and hit Cuba a couple years ago. Five in a row, they were going across Cuba like bowling balls when they were trying to force Cuba into the Latin American Organization of States. So at any rate, but the sun, going back to the sun, none of this would have been possible if it were not for the tremendous power of the sun that had built up during that time. And I had a thought at that time, and I actually stated it on some radio shows back in the early 2000s. I said, the sun has built up to such a tremendous, powerful state. Could it dip down, oscillate down to a very low state in the next solar cycle? And I actually presented this at an American Geophysical Union meeting back in the early 2000s as part of one of my presentations. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. I was involved at that time or associated with some of the top solar predictors in the world, and none of them saw that coming. They were still using the technique of using magnetic fields, current and past magnetic field patterns, to try and predict future solar peaks and solar activity. They were all wrong, because they didn't understand the feedback process used by the sun with the solar capacitor. And by the way, Jupiter, as it discharges the solar capacitor in its 11-year orbit around the sun, is one of the main causes of the solar cycle and the solar magnetic field reversing, etc. But because Jupiter plays a very important role in the cycle of the sun, let's put it that way. So at any rate, going back to the sun 10 years ago, the sun was booming, just belting out hour after hour immense solar flares. Comparing it to the sun now, the current solar peak, so to speak, as I said, is weaker than many of the solar minimums. In fact, it would be safe to say that the sun is probably weaker than many of the solar minimums, except for the last one. I remember being on Coast to Coast many times when we started setting records. We were 200 days, then 300 days, then 400 days, then 500 days, then 600 days without a single solar sunspot. Absolutely beyond records, going all the way back to Galileo when they started recording sunspots. Unprecedented. Even during the Maunder minimum, it never got that low, to where there were just absolutely no sunspots for 600 days. So just beyond record-setting records, and the sun remained at a very low level. That would make one think that maybe when it rebounded, it would rebound up and go up much higher than it was before, but that's not the case. The sun remains at an extremely inactive level. So what would it take for the sun to pick up again? And this is rather strange. Another thing that's going on is the solar spectrum is out of whack with black body radiation. The sun, according to the core theory of the sun about regarding the core fusion model of the sun, the sun should react as a orange ball, a glowing orange ball at about 6,000 degrees. And this should last and be stable for millions and millions of years, according to the standard calculations. But the sun obviously is not following any such pattern, which proves once again something I've said all along, is that the fusion of the sun is up at the surface, not in the core. But the question is, what can bring the sun back to normal, both electrically and in terms of light? In terms of the light energy electromagnetic spectrum that's coming off the sun, the sun has changed. It's giving off a lot more UV. In fact, if you go out in the sun recently, you're probably getting burned. Getting a lot of that UV on a regular day, you're getting a lot more ultraviolet radiation. In fact, there have been UV warnings for a long time now, where the sun is putting out a lot more ultraviolet radiation. So make sure you wear caps and long sleeve shirts and protect your body literally against ultraviolet radiation, because it's at a much higher level than normal. But it's not something you read about in the evening paper or hear about on the evening news. So the sun's spectrum is way out of whack from normal. Electrically, it's way out of whack from normal. Okay, so I want to do a summary here of everything I've been saying regarding Comet Ison. Given that the sun is at extremely low energy levels, given that the solar capacitor is at an extremely low energy level, given the path of Comet Ison, and also I want to interject that Comet Ison, once again, is not Planet X, it's not Nibiru, it's not going to cause the end of the world. There's no system of planets associated with it at all. That was a huge piece of misinformation that NASA tried to rope me into. And I didn't bite on that hook, of course. I see their games coming. And I mentioned on the John Moore show this week that from all of this activity, that NASA has a special panel to present information on Comet Ison. The huge amount of misinformation being using my name on YouTube, on other venues, through people who are under mind control programs with the government, trying to use my name and twist my information. I think that NASA is out to try and destroy my image and name. And of course, my audience is well enough tuned to what's going on. That's why you have to understand not just science, but the politics of science. Because if you just try and understand science, it's not going to work. Okay, let me summarize, though, my statement about what I expect with Comet Ison here as we proceed through the next weeks and months. Okay, we are today, September 26th. In 4 days, Comet Ison will approach, and on the fifth day, will have the closest interaction with a planet of any comet in recorded history, 7 million miles from a major comet or even a minor comet like this is really, really backdoor close. And we have not seen anything like this since the ancients saw Venus rolling through the solar system, affecting Mars, affecting Jupiter, and also affecting Earth on two occasions, and then becoming the planet Venus. The Comet Ison will be a mere 7 million miles from Mars. So I would expect that NASA will be able to detect electrical discharging between the comet and Mars. And this would require very sensitive sensitive equipment. Now, right now, for example, NASA is watching Comet Ison in the ultraviolet and in X-rays. And so it would be clear that if there's that electrical arcing, you would see X-rays up in the upper atmosphere of Mars, auroral activity in the upper atmosphere of Mars. And, of course, none of this will be reported to the public. But NASA has 60 satellite pieces of equipment intensely watching this comet right now. It is getting unprecedented amount of viewing. And, of course, that's the other job of the Tony Phillips Carey List Tier 2 Fairy Tale Science news release, is to make sure that none of that information gets to you, and that some little dribble of information like, oh, it's developing carbon dioxide right now, it's crossing the frost line. You know, this is the garbage that they will pawn off on the public. So what will happen? Comet Ison will interact electrically with Mars. That should excite the comet, so I expect within the next couple of days, Comet Ison should go through some type of brightening. I don't know how much or how much to predict. The sun is extremely weak, and these things are very difficult to predict. I would expect some severe weather, some hurricane activity on Mars. That would be another wonderful thing that amateurs could actually detect on Mars. Okay, I got to move quickly through this. Okay, then Comet Ison will move into the inner solar system, but still interacting with Mars. Now Mars will be on the tail side of Comet Ison, giving Mars even more possibility of going comet, actually developing a comet tail. From that point, Comet Ison will move into the inner solar system for a November 10th to 14th interaction with the planet Mercury. That electrical alignment actually occurs on the evening between the 13th and the 14th of November. We could see Mercury going comet, actually developing a comet tail. We could see electrical discharging. That will be visible in the early morning sky, beautiful moonless sky. Unfortunately, the moon is a bad factor in observing Comet Ison right now. With its interaction with Mars, it'll move into the solar interaction with the sun at the end of November, and then Comet Ison will probably swing around the sun where it'll come out, and then the later December will move up into the evening sky, the night sky for all viewers in the northern hemisphere. That's when NASA will pour on the coals for misinformation, because they're afraid the public is going to wake up and find out that that baby ain't no snowball. And so that's why they have all of this in place, and that's when I also expect a power outage, the planned power outage that they're all talking about, the Janet Napolitanos and the Senator Trent, etc. So be prepared for that. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Remember my webpage, jmccsci.com. Good night.